This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com and get them answered like the ones we're answering today. So what's our next question, Layla?
We've got an email from Michael. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'd appreciate your take on the surprising outcome of a study cited by Mr. Cooperman of Consumer Labs. Too much vitamin D weakens legs. In recent months, we have reported that giving too much vitamin D to people who don't need it increases risks of falls. A major study now shows that it also weakens leg muscles, apparently to the surprise of researchers. Keep in mind that giving vitamin D to people who are deficient in it can decrease the risk of falls.
Right. So let's explain that. First of all, this individual, Cooperman, who writes for
he's
citing a study that shows that there's a sweet spot for vitamin D.
Yeah.
And that insufficient, this is all based on several original studies which showed that giving vitamin D to people who were elderly reduced their risk of falls. That's very well established.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, it was found that if you give too much, you may slightly statistically increase the risk for falls.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure if that was in more than one study or replicated, mm-hmm. but it was unanticipated. It was thought like, oh, the more the better. But there seems to be, as with many supplements, a sweet spot. So this, what this argues for is not taking vitamin D willy-nilly, tons and tons, the more the better,
yeah.
is get it tested, make sure that your vitamin D is in the range of mm-hmm. 40 to 70, but maybe mm-hmm. not, 110, because maybe that's too much.
Right.
It's unnatural. It's more than you would get from daily sunlight exposure, which is
sure.
the way we usually get vitamin D.
Which has a natural shutoff.
Right, which
yeah.
actually shuts off. But
yeah.
you can't overdose on vitamin D from sun, because it's kind of mm-hmm. like a thermostat. It shuts down your vitamin D synthesis in the skin. However, if you can, if you just take scads and scads of vitamin D by mouth, you can push your vitamin D levels too high.
Right.
So
yeah.
that's all they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And, it doesn't mean you shouldn't take vitamin D. It's you shouldn't take it willy-nilly without monitoring and some degree
mm-hmm.
of testing. The trouble is that it's hard without testing to know how much to take, because
Absolutely.
We see some people taking, a multivitamin with vitamin D and they're okay.
Yeah.
And we see some people who are taking 5,000 and they barely get up to, 35.
Right.
So.
Right. Exactly.
So you have to get tested.
Exactly. Because there's a reason those people who aren't absorbing their vitamin D, it could be GI issues of malabsorption. It could be obesity where the vitamin D is being sequestered. It could be certain medications. For instance, anti-seizure medications, and also certain steroids can actually inhibit the absorption of vitamin D as well. So it's pretty interesting. That's why everybody should get tested.
And it's also, it's been my theory for a while, and now it's been verified, that people who have problems,
mm-hmm.
namely inflammatory problems, seem to eat up their vitamin D, and they may require more. So
yeah.
the sicker people yeah. fighting something,
right?
People maybe fighting a chronic infection, they seem to require more.
Right.
The body needs more.
It's like a natural antibiotic. That's
yes,
why cold
it is.
And flu
it
season is.
Is
in the winter.
Yep.
It's when our vitamin D levels are lowest.
Yes.
Kind of makes sense that way.
Yep.
Okay. Michael has a follow-up question.
Oh, okay.
When taking specific amino acids, should they be taken separately and on an empty stomach so they don't compete with each other? Many thanks, and please continue the outstanding service you provide to the public. Thank you, Michael. I don't see amino acids competing with each other. I'm thinking in terms of food.
Yeah, exactly.
Where we have a variety of amino acids being digested, absorbed at the same time.
Exactly, because that's not the way amino acids are presented in foods. They're presented in an array. So if we were to follow this to its extreme, you could not take branched chain amino acids, which are three amino acids. You'd have to take one at a time to avoid malabsorbing one or the other. So, I think that it is okay to take them together.
Mm-hmm.
It just may be, we do say that if you're taking amino acids for a specific purpose, say arginine for herpes, or you're taking, you may be able to take it with food in this case, you may want to take it away from food.
Right.
Because the protein will interfere. We do know this, is that for sure there's competition when you're taking tryptophan or 5-hydroxytryptophan. There's competition with other amino acids. Mm. So it's best to take tryptophan fasting.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that's interesting. And what you just said about arginine and herpes, because lysine can antagonize arginine, and that's why the ratio is important?
I'm not sure if it antagonizes it for absorption or if it just has a counter effect.
Okay.
Think that doesn't necessarily mean that other amino acids are going to antagonize one another.
Right, right. Michael, thank you for your very thoughtful questions.
And, these are questions that are probably the subject for future research in the field of nutrition.
Yeah.
If we pick up our next
American Journal of
Clinical Nutrition, we might see an article that tackles that specific topic, but it'd have to be amino acid by amino acid. You know, is there competition? You know, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know all the answers.
We don't. Nutrition is a very, very new science in our evolution. So we've got an email from Dave. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I currently don't have any prostate issues. However, I do see a lot of advertising about super beta prostate. That claims are made that one should take this supplement to keep a healthy prostate. I'm 49 years old. I would like to know your thoughts about this product.
Yeah, I think that it's not as good as taking Sal Palmetto.
Mm-hmm.
The products like Super Beta Prostate and many of the other products, they're all advertised on radio, and it's like, you know, free sample, money back guarantee, just pay nominal shipping, which may be, you know, $16.95. These are products that contain a lot of beta testosterol, which is a cheap sort of copycat of what's in Sal Palmetto.
Mm.
And there are more studies on Sal Palmetto per se than on beta testosterol for prostate. And I do believe that he's using the correct application, which is, I think that these products are much more helpful for preventing prostate problems than they are for, if you have a super enlarged prostate three times normal, are you going to shrink it down with that? Or if you're, getting up to, pee six times a night, can you take that product and get complete relief? I think that you will get mild or minimal relief. I think some of these products rely on a placebo effect.
Wow.
You know, is that people think, men who take them think that they're better, but they're probably not that much better.
Dave has another comment. He says, thank you for your podcast. I've listened for the past year. I found a lot of good information and enjoyment in them. My entire life, I was an advocate and lived the low-fat diet and never lost a pound. I listened to one of your podcasts about low-carb healthy eating. At that time, I was 30 pounds overweight, and in only 3 months, I lost the 30 pounds and have never felt better. Thank you very much for your labor in producing the podcast that we all love and can't wait to hear each week.
Excellent.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, that's really nice
to hear.
Thank
you so much.
It's just so gratifying to hear that people who we haven't even met are listening to this, accessing the information, applying it in their lives, and it's making a difference for them. That's just great. It's just exactly what we're trying to accomplish with this.
Yeah. Okay, we've got an email from Nancy. Hello. I recently developed a Baker's cyst in my left knee. Any suggestions?
Well, a Baker's cyst...
my knees are in good condition.
Pretty common condition where you get a sort of a pouch behind your knee and in the flexor surface of your knee.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that's painful. And sometimes it's just annoying and, kind of gets in the way. It is actually a form of arthritis of the knee expressed backwards instead of forwards. And, you know, suggests there's some inflammation, a little bit of an effusion behind the knee. Effusion means a leakage of fluid. So pretty much what you do for arthritis is what you do for Baker's cyst. So what's good for knee arthritis? You can take fish oil, curcumin. You can modify your diet, get on a less pro-inflammatory diet. Yeah. You could take undenatured collagen type 2, UC2. Yes. You can take, well, let's talk, think of some others, glucosamine chondroitin.
MSM.
MSM.
Boswellian. Mm-hmm. Good anti-inflammatory. You could remove the nightshades from your diet.
Right.
That might be helpful, especially in arthritis, if it's arthritic. The removal of tomatoes, white potatoes, eggplant, and peppers of all sorts, including cayenne and paprika.
Mm-hmm.
Tobacco is also a nightshade. A lot of people don't know that.
But is it affect your, I mean, smoking is bad for you, but it might be worse if you chew the tobacco than if you eat the tobacco as opposed to smoke the tobacco.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Which they just banned at Yankee Stadium.
Chewing tobacco.
Chewing tobacco.
So the players can't chew tobacco. Well,
there's
chomp on it anymore?
There's a, you know, Mets pitcher, Harvey, I think, I don't really follow the Mets, but I'm a Yankee fan. But, they say that Matt Harvey, that's why he's not pitching well, because he's an inveterate tobacco chewer. And now that they're depriving him of his tobacco, his pitching is off.
Oh, no.
And it's unfair because it's Mayor de Blasio's fault.
Oh,
he's messing up the Mets. See?
Oh, my goodness. And it's de Blasio that banned it?
Well, it's under his regime.
Wow.
It's under the city council of New York is banning tobacco chewing. But I think that's a good idea because, you know, A, it, you know, look, who cares what the baseball players do themselves? I mean, they can do whatever they want as long as they don't, you know, juice with, you know, steroids and stuff.
Right.
But it is a sport where they are role models and they, you know, should be
any
good
sports
role models.
Figure, really. They should be good role models.
They should be
good.
I mean, think of Babe Ruth. He was a big boozer and he was like a womanizer and, you know, he's still the greatest baseball player
in history. I just saw that movie starring John Goodman. He played a really, really
John
good.
John Goodman?
Yeah.
He would be good.
Yeah.
Because Babe Ruth was kind of fat.
Yeah, yeah.
He did not look like a superb athlete.
No.
I mean, that guy would just as soon smoke a cigar and, you know, have a drink.
Not to downplay baseball, but I don't think you need to be the athlete that you would if you were a pro NBA player. All respect to baseball players.
No question. Now they're really superbly conditioned because the whole thing is about avoiding injuries. They have a very demanding schedule.
Okay.
They lose salary when they get injured and, you know, they don't want downtime. So they really are very flexible. They have very intense training regimens. But they actually had a sort of a tell-all biography by one of the original 1969 Mets, you know, that miracle team of 1969.
Uh-huh.
And it was written by, what's the name of the guy? It's on the tip of my tongue. One of the goofier Mets from that team, because they were all kind of goofy. It was like a miracle team, because they were...
Okay.
And Cranepool, Ed Cranepool.
Okay.
Ed Cranepool, blast from the past. And he wrote that in the clubhouse, they would take swigs of booze while taking amphetamines. And and then they'd get out there and try and hit the ball. But that was because they had such a rigorous schedule. Transportation wasn't that good then. You know, you had to get on trains and buses and things like that. And they were exhausted much of the time. So this is the way they kind of like woke themselves up with pep pills and booze.
Oh, my.
And
That's no athletic diet.
It's coming out now, you know. But I don't know.
Oh, wow.
I mean, to some extent, you know, baseball, you think of like a typical outfielder. And they may stand for long periods of time not doing anything.
That's true.
Out there in right field with an occasional burst of, you know, sprint to catch a ball.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. Nancy, best of luck with your cyst. All right. Oh, we've got an email from Paul. Dear Dr. Hoffman, which is preferable for health and conditioning? Long, grueling marathons, or relatively short bursts of intense aerobic activity? Some say the latter is more natural. Run from the saber-toothed tiger.
Yes, exactly. I think that is probably correct. Although, it depends. And different strokes for different folks. I think marathons are amazing, but they're a little bit like climbing Mount Everest. You know, now that it's the climbing season for Mount Everest, like the latest death toll is like 4 with more missing. Mm-hmm. And it's really not a healthy thing to do because 100% you're going to get sick and you're almost going to die and there's a pretty good chance you could die from, but it's a great thing to do. And, you know, it is the symbol of attainment. So, you know, people who climb Mount Everest encourage other people to do other healthy things. So people who do marathons encourage other people to get off their butts and, you know, walk around the block a couple of times. I've done the marathon. I will never do it again. It is too, for my body, my athleticism, it's too much pounding and it's very harmful. I think a lot of people who do the marathon are kidding themselves. Mm-hmm. They're, going to create very serious injuries for themselves, and it's beyond their capacity. It's just a struggle. But you know, it's like an ego thing. You want to do it and show that you know you did the marathon.
It can bring on arthritis.
It can. I had an injury for about 6 months afterwards from like a pain in one of my legs just from the wear and tear. So on the other hand, there are some people who are ideally suited to that. They have the right body type, you know, like these Kenyans or some, you know, these, they're just amazing.
And those sneakers.
They're running machines.
But that could be why. They're not wearing sneakers. They're not wearing shoes. And that's a whole other.
It has to do with their body type. It has to do with their acclimation to altitude. It has to do with their, some of these, kids, have schools that are like 13 miles away. So the only way to get to school is to run to school, you know,
at
an elevation of like 7,200 feet or, you know, 8,500 feet. They become terrific runners. It's natural. Great. Good for them. For the average person, not to be advised. Yeah. You know, shorter amounts of running seem to be good, but getting into this thing about the burst of exercise, there's this called HIIT, high intensity interval training. There's really good evidence that short bouts of intense exercise are more beneficial than long bouts of sort of relatively leisurely exercise. So
more fat burning.
It's more fat burning. It increases strength and endurance, and it's very good for conditioning. But it's harder to do if you're deconditioned, you know, to go to full intensity of exercise. You actually it's catch 22. You have to be in good condition to do high intensity interval training. So for the average person, you know, just walking or getting on a stationary bicycle for half an hour while you catch up with an episode of House of Cards, you know, or Game of Thrones, and that's going to do you a lot of good. You know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, sprints. When I go to a spin class, do you ever go to spin classes?
Not spin, no.
Spin was what spin is basically get on the bicycle, but you don't just go you have bursts of speed where he goes, you know, okay, go, 30 seconds or something like that. And if you have a heart monitor on, you can actually see your heart rate go up to, you know, near maximal. Yeah. And then you recover, and then you do it again, and you do it again. And that's a really good way to condition yourself. Mm-hmm. And that brings in some of the benefits of high-intensity interval training.
The other thing is when you do hit, you could shorten your exercise time.
Yeah.
Instead of going for an hour-long or 45-minute jog, you could shorten it to 20 or 30 minutes, do the intervals within.
Yeah, I know a guy who, he looked like an Adonis. I think he was like 65. And I said, you must exercise like crazy. He said, well, you know, he used to be an Ironman triathlete. But he says, now I just do like 20 minutes of high-intensity interval training every day. It's like, really?
That's it.
You get such results with that? And he says, yeah, that's all the time I have now. And
everybody has 20 minutes. Everybody who's listening, everybody has 20 minutes somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah. To be able to do something like that. And so the HIIT form of exercise can also increase human growth hormone better, HGH.
Right.
Better than a long. And the other problem with a long bout of exercise or long exercise greater than 45 minutes is it may increase stress, and that means an increase in cortisol secretion.
Yeah.
So that could be a problem.
So what do you think when I do a triathlon that takes 3 hours to complete?
Well, you're not doing that.
Every day.
You're not doing that. No. Hopefully even 3 times a week you're not doing that. So
the training for it is usually, you know, unless the long, except for the long bike rides, is usually a bike ride, maybe a 2 hour bike ride, you know, if I, if I take a long bike ride. But, usually the training, like just for example, this morning, I didn't have much time. I had to get to the office early and I went to the pool. And when you go to the pool early, it's like the really devout swimmers. So they're like the really fast swimmers. The pool was really crowded. And I said, okay, I got half an hour. I'm just going to go. And I'm going to try and keep up with some of these swimmers. Well, I didn't.
Wow.
But they really, inspired me to swim hard and fast. And literally, I think I got out of the water with a great workout in less than half an hour.
Terrific.
You know, so.
And swimming is one of the best forms of exercise. You're not jarring your joints. You're not pounding.
No shock.
You're using your whole body.
And shock absorption.
And it's harder than people think.
It's a good breathing regime too, because you can't breathe all the time. You have your head down in the water and you kind of discipline your breathing. Well, that takes us to the end of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast, because we covered as many questions as we could with significant digressions, but we like to digress. And hopefully you enjoy our digressions. So keep sending us your questions. We'll get to them eventually. Be patient, because we've got a little bit of a backlog. But if you listen from week to week, you will be gratified to hear your question tackled on our weekly Q&A with Layla. Thank you, Layla, for joining me today.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla on Intelligent Medicine.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.